What does good HR look like, and how can HR add value? This is Work Matters, the podcast where we explore what leaders can do to make work more productive, valuable, meaningful, and impactful. I'm Thomas Bertels, and I help leaders fix work. My guest today is Steve Degnan, a senior HR executive who recently retired after 20 years as CHRO for Nestlé Purina North America. I had a great time talking to him and hope you will enjoy this conversation. And if you do, please don't forget to like, subscribe, or share. Steve, welcome to the show.
Very happy to be here.
So you have an interesting background. You're not a native HR person. Maybe just for our listeners, tell us how you got into a CHRO role.
Sure thing. Right after university, I graduated and I was in the Army for 4 years over in your home country, and a great experience. But I got out after four and ended up at Nestlé as my first job, and was lucky enough to have one of those careers where I stayed there for a very long time. But I moved all over the place. So to your point, I started in manufacturing. I had some early gigs in distribution and logistics. I actually did a little bit of industrial engineering on an early sort of work assessment team they used to have called OIT, Operations Improvement Teams. And it was actually during one of those engagements where we were doing things like time studies, classical process improvement stuff, that the head of HR for the particular division I was in was interested in what I was doing and took a liking to me and invited me to learn the dark side, if you will, the dark arts of human resources. And that's when I joined. So I was about 5 years into my career when that happened. And it was very unexpected. Definitely did not intend to become an HR person. And let's just say I have a little bit of an irreverent and maybe wise guy personality. So people who knew me in college, if I run into them, are often quite surprised at where I ended up spending the rest of my career. But it can be done. I'm proof.
So maybe let's just jump right in. What would you consider good HR?
Good HR in a company is often behind the scenes, and it's not first and foremost and the thing that gets all the attention. And in fact, if you want to be an HR person, I tell people, you're not going to get all the accolades in HR. Sales and marketing types tend to go after that stuff, and good for them. But oftentimes the work you're doing in human resources is not compatible with being out front and being the one that collects the awards. There's a, pick your metaphor, a priest or rabbi or Yoda counselor type of role that comes with HR people, where you're helping others maximize their effectiveness. It's not always you, but in so doing, it's implicit that you're going to have a good HR department if you're doing that. So to get more specific about what is good HR, in my opinion, all of the customer-facing stuff, whether it's recruiting that touches the external customer and has an experience with the company and is the first time they're engaging with the company, that stuff's got to be outstanding. And it's got to pull people in, and it's a signal of how much you respect the person and their time that you offer a seamless, good experience in that regard. And then internally, sure, you got to have good services for anything that your employees are messing with, from benefits to training and all these other things. They've got to be good systems, and it's got to be done in a way that the folks are pleased with it and it does not become an issue. So a lot of times, you won't get compliments if stuff is working well. And that's a sign that everything's okay and pretty good. And you shouldn't be soliciting them either and talking about how great we are. That's implicit. It's part of your job. And the other things that are important are working on dimensions of human resources that help the business. I'll give you one very vivid experience. One of the CEOs that I worked for, we made a deal when he took over that at least once a year, we as a leadership team were going to do something that was learning related. Okay, so one of those experiences, we went as a leadership team to the Gettysburg battlefield in Pennsylvania. And we had two military historians take us around for a day and a half, visiting all the key sites of the battlefield and what the key lessons were, the strategies that worked and the strategies that didn't, and how could they apply to us. Very memorable. And some of the things we learned there became things that we constantly refer to going forward. That, and again, I'm this not just about me and self-promoting and all that sort of thing. That was a boss that enabled that. And actually the rest of the leadership team that was quite interested in it too. That's good HR and not necessarily traditional or something that gets talked about a lot. But if you're doing something to learn every year, that's a big deal as a group. So you have a common frame of reference. The next year we went to the Johnson Space Flight Center down in Houston, went through the original Apollo mission with some smart people helping us along. Another year we went out to Silicon Valley and visited Google and Facebook and a number of other companies to see what we could learn. That was my favorite part of the job, trying to create the conditions for learning and getting better as much as we could with the leaders. And that was fun. So that's just a few thoughts on that stuff, Thomas.
I think you're right. Who else is in a position to help the leadership team work on the business together? Obviously the CEO, but I think the human dimension deserves somebody to really focus on that. Where do you see the biggest opportunity for HR to add value to the organization? So one is educate, develop the leadership team. What else comes to mind?
I think the big one is performance. And that sort of amounts to being a referee at times, a coach at times, doing some of the hard stuff that nobody wants to do and provoking some of the hard stuff that nobody wants to deal with. So you're looking at different elements of performance across the organization. You're looking at leadership. You're looking at the talent in the pipeline that's going to run the company someday. And you're looking at poor leadership. And every company's got this issue. And you're hopefully causing poor leadership and poor performance to be sorted out. And if you're not, your potted plant just sitting there taking up resources. I had a couple of early mentors. One of them, who's that HR guy that recruited me into HR, used to say, you need to have an agenda. You're not just there as an HR person to be called upon when somebody else decides there's a problem. You're there to pick out the problems you want to work on that you see are the biggest that are holding people back. And it could be a certain leader in a certain department, a certain part of the organization that no one's ever dealt with. And it's just been sitting there like an open secret that the whole company knows is an embarrassment. And you decide to go there and start talking about it. It could be something that's not human related. It could be a system that's causing problems. It could be a lack of talent that is obvious in the company where you decide to engage and do some different types of recruiting or convince the organization maybe there's too much internal promotion going on and maybe it's time to go outside and bring some fresh people in. Those are a few of the examples I can think of, but you got to have an agenda and figure out what you want to do. I remember I had a great interview with a young person that was coming up in the organization that wanted to be the director of HR for our sales organization. And I asked the person in the interview, okay, if you could go in there tomorrow, I want to know the top three things you would pursue. What's your agenda? Couldn't answer the question because it's this sort of passive mentality of, I'm just there to serve. No, you're not. You're there to lead and you're there to provoke if needed. To his credit, that person came back the next day with awesome things. He goes, can I answer that question now? And I said, sure. And he ended up getting the role. But I think it's a good lesson for HR people everywhere. You better have your own set of things that you want to do. You're not just there to serve at the pleasure of the king. The CEO gets a lot of latitude in what your agenda is going to be. And I'm not denying that. But at the same time, you've got to have your own independent thoughts about what you're going to do and pursue and try to change when you take any given role.
I find that really refreshing because I think you're right. If all you do is take orders, right, then you really don't deserve a seat at the table.
Right.
But what are some of the obstacles? What prevents HR people from stepping into that and driving that agenda? It might partially be their own imagination. But I think there's also some other obstacles along the way too, right?
I would say HR is a little different than all the other roles in one regard because so much of it is done by influence. And you've got to have good relationships. And to develop good relationships, I'm sorry, but a lot of times it's time spent. You could have an instant connection with anyone on the executive team and find it very easy to do business. But with others, it's going to take years. And I'm not just saying this because I spent 19 years as the head of HR of Purina. And I was happy to do it, and it was a great gig. But I also believe there's something to longevity when it comes to HR people. Why? It's the relationship thing and knowing and understanding the dynamics of how those relationships affect the company, especially at the leadership level. It is knowing and understanding the culture and the major and minor influences on the culture and how it works and how different actions a leader or set of leaders may take will affect the culture of the organization. And you're a kind of a curator of that culture if you're an HR person. So thinking you can dive in 1 year and make this gigantic impact as a new CHRO, for example, and that happens, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think it's harder to get a quick impact as the head of HR anywhere than it is, for instance, coming in as the head of supply chain, where there's things that are broken, that are process related, that you can really get into if you're good very quickly. There's parts of HR that are like that. If you're a good labor negotiator, you could probably get in. But even then, there's history and there's relationships with whoever's in the unions and everything else. And some longevity even helps there. Probably fixing a broken benefits program might be the easiest thing to fix in HR, or a really super lousy recruiting process. Okay, there are some transactional pieces, but so much of the rest of it is tied up in relationships and culture. Back to your original question, the obstacles are oftentimes thinking you can get quick results without investing in relationships and building your ability to influence, because you have to do big things that you have no direct control over. You are going to be blamed for it, whether you like it or not. People are going to associate you with certain things like the culture and say, why isn't HR doing anything about this? So the only way we can get things done oftentimes are by getting the other executives to come along with us. And when they do, magic happens. But if you think you can do it without those relationships, you're probably not being realistic.
Let's talk about the future. HR, AI, what's your take on this?
You familiar with that old term VUCA? It was created, at the Army War College, these guys at what's called the Institute for the Future, and that stood for the world that was emerging 25, 30 years ago. Volatile, uncertain, I forget, complex, something like that. There's a new one, a new term called BANI. Have you heard of this? The same group that created VUCA has created BANI, B-A-N-I. It stands for brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible. Doesn't that sound great?
We went from VUCA to BANI.
Yeah, we all want to get involved with that. You know, what occurs to me, though, if it's really going to be like that, I think HR becomes more important than it's ever been. And while Amazon is making announcements, hey, we're going to lay off 15,000 HR people because we can, and AI and all this stuff. To me, AI is just the latest form of technology that's hitting. And we've all been through these implementations. And I don't mean to oversimplify it. And I will admit there are probably elements to this that are a little bit more dire. But we all went through, remember the Y2K stuff, and there was a panic about that and finding the right talent to do it. And then various forms of that happened as the internet became what it is now. And there were probably three or four iterations of, okay, now we need this kind of talent and we don't have it. We have to go find it. At Nestle, the implementation of SAP was just this ongoing version of that every three or four years. There's the new one and we have talent that doesn't know how to do the new stuff and we have to go find them now. And I see AI to a large extent. It's maybe the latest and maybe more intense version of that. I'm not denying whole categories of jobs will be done away with, but just whatever you want to think about, whether it was buggy whips hundreds of years ago or fax machines, what will come and what work will become, I think, hasn't been imagined yet. And I'm not overly panicky about it, but I do think the biggest problem is people get set in their ways. And everyone wants a set it and forget it kind of career. I learned how to drive a bus 50 years ago and I'm still doing it. And that's what I do. And there's a lot of jobs like that, truckers and different types of equipment operators. And some of this stuff may get automated and probably the bigger problem is not so much the automation as the lack of, I won't just say willingness, maybe lack of time as well to investigate new skills, to invest in retraining yourself. No one wants to do it. If you're a copywriter and if AI takes your job away, what are you going to do next? You're going to create better content and you're going to move up the food chain and do something that adds a little bit more value. And I think HR plugs in at all levels of this because it's capability building. AI was erupting as I retired the first half of 2023. Right before that, we partnered with a local university because other than AI, there were all kinds of other technologies erupting. Remember all this stuff about digital twins and different types of robotics and a million different terms were erupting in 2019 and 2020 before AI even became what it is. So we partnered with this university and said, we want you to pick the top 25 technologies and create little chunks of learning. We had never made that much e-learning mandatory before, and I was worried about it. So we put out literally 12 hours of e-learning, 25 little chunks of classes. You could do it at your own place. We got great feedback on the whole thing because it was useful information that people were learning. That's a good example, a mini example. That's the kind of interventions HR can and should be making along the way. You do this now, what are you going to do later? Because none of us get to be static anymore. Your skills are going to expire. So requiring everybody to invest in the next thing and figuring out what their next thing is, I think is going to be the push. That's what I would be thinking about if I was still in the practice of running a big HR organization. It's just training the organization to figure out what their next set of skills is going to be, building their skill stack. But I think there's an unending supply of that stuff that HR people can be working on if they want to and if they're useful. And yeah, the old stuff is going to be automated. That's fine. Some of benefits will be automated. I would argue, though, we make a huge mistake by extracting the human element out of some of these things. People don't want to talk to a computer about their health issues. They want to be treated with dignity like a human being. I don't know what Amazon's doing, but if they think everybody can interact with some AI program to manage their health benefits when they have a serious problem, they're making a mistake. And I think the smart companies will get over this hump of automated nonsense. And then someone's going to figure out we need a few humans around to really do some of the heavy lifting and some of the important work. And it'll probably go full circle. I hope it does. Maybe I'm full of it. I don't know. The momentum and the breathlessness that you hear in the media about some of this stuff, the delta between some of these dire scenarios that are being painted and what will actually happen is pretty big. 75% of jobs will either go away or be completely blah, 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 all this stuff. I don't know. We had some futurist talk at Purina years ago. I'm going to say it was 2017, who said by 2020, trucking would be completely automated. And this person was saying, yeah, there's trucks now that follow each other. This is going to happen. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. But by the time the lawyers get involved and there's a couple of accidents with these robotic trucks, the whole thing will be held up for decades. And we're not there yet. And I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I think largely it will. It's just taking a lot longer than they said. I think we're in the same camp with AI. There'll be fits and starts.
I think you put your finger on it. I think it's the sense of agency / accountability. At the end of the day, I don't think we're willing to accept this black box universe that the Oracle of Delphi says fire 10% of the people and hear their names and numbers.
And there's tons of groupthink in that regard, Thomas. Once one company announces we're getting rid of this many, then it starts reverberating and one does another and another. That's been going on lately. And I don't think it's AI related. I think it's just inefficiency they were living with. And they're saying, okay, this is a good time to announce now that we're doing some surgery because all these other ones are. Let's get in on this and cull the herd a little bit.
You're right. I think there's a little bit of herd mentality. It's also very hard, I think, for CEOs to say, if they're getting asked, what do you do with AI? Nothing. Well, studying it, right? That's just good enough. So you got to start some pilots. You got to spend some money. And maybe that's a good thing because if you don't get on the bandwagon now, you might not have enough time to catch up later on.
Here's a good one for HR. If someone cracks the code on this, I will believe AI is being helpful. So we've had this debate about customization forever, right? So we're going to ultimately personalize everyone's job and their benefits. You got pensions and 401ks in one bucket of money. You've got the benefits in another bucket of money. You've got perks and other types of benefits in another bucket, right? And then there's always debates about adding some new things to the mix. I will believe that AI is truly helping when someone comes out with a truly customizable to the person plan where I can say something like this. I want to take less 401k money match, and I want to have you guys maybe pay some of my college loans over here with that. Or I'm going to take less of a annual bonus and devote some of that money into having less of a copay in my benefits over here. And I want to have all of these things interchangeable and adjustable. And that's as far away right now with all of this whiz-bang bullshit that we're all hearing about as it's ever been. Nobody wants to mix those things. Boy, if you start that conversation, people's heads explode. They don't want to deal with it. It's too hard. But I will believe AI is really adding value when someone finally cracks the code on that. It makes all these things.
You're setting the bar very high. I like it. I think that's a really good threshold.
I truly believe that's an element of the future for HR is personalization down to the person, not just for buckets of employees or similar types, but what do you need as an individual that we can try and adjust around you?
The benefits is one piece, but I think there's also obviously all these opportunities to make the work itself a little bit better because we're spending 8, 10, 12 hours a day doing something.
This isn't just buttering you up. I would say that work design's a gigantic missing element right now, especially because of what happened during the pandemic. If you're going to tell me all of these jobs uniformly should be remote and should be at home, you know, I'm not just a curmudgeon on this issue because we were already doing remote before the pandemic happened. Every company would admit this. If they had a really good talent and their spouse had to move to another city, you'd work with them. You'd say a few days a month, you need to be here and blah, blah, blah. And we're going to work this out. And we did certainly. But if you're telling me that the only reason groups of people work together in close proximity was because of an accident of nature and that had we had the right technology, we would have dispersed eons ago. I don't believe that. I think there's more to it. And I think work design is not taken seriously by most companies. It's not even discussed. A job description gets written and it's an afterthought. And if someone convinces their boss that they need a headcount to do X, Y, and Z, the organization goes along with it until they don't. And sometimes that works out because the person we bring in delivers a lot of value, whether it has anything to do with the original intent of why they were there, I don't know. But no one's thinking about this. Maybe factory managers are more than anyone because they're an environment where physical stuff needs to get done smartly and there are risks if it's not. But in terms of knowledge work, I think if we don't revisit work design soon, we have the mess that we have because of it. And everybody's worried about their jobs because every job in knowledge work is this mishmash of meetings and direction and some sort of technology to back up doing analytics, whether it's Excel or something more complicated, and then throw in some PowerPoints, throw all that around all day, and we're doing stuff.
They're making something happen. All right, million-dollar question. What do you see as the future for HR? Where's the train going to go?
I think it'll be a pivotal role. And I think in the best companies, it already is. But I believe that this sort of intersection of technology, people, culture is never going to go away. There might be elements of it, transactional elements of it that peel off. But you're always going to need someone to be looking at everything from another angle in any company. There's always a debate at what point when a company's growing, do you add an HR person? Is it 100 people? Well, if you're running a factory, it probably is. If you have a lot of jobs and a lot of people doing different things, you need someone to start stewarding who gets hired, how they get trained, yada, yada. So I believe that's always going to be there. Even if you have a factory full of robots, you're going to have technicians that have got to take care of them, and they're going to need to be trained, and they're human beings, As long as you have humans around, there's going to be all the complexity, the good and the bad that goes with it. And someone's going to have to manage all of the traditional stuff that goes with that. So I don't think it's going away. I think if anything, it becomes more important. I think for the most enlightened companies, it already is. And they don't debate about whether or not they have an HR person. They have one. They try to have a good one. So yeah, I would be excited and optimistic and bullish about the future with HR people. Obviously, I can't look ahead 5 years and predict what the exact activities will be. We'll give you one. Here's a good one. So you've probably read in the recruiting realm, there's so many AI-enabled applications happening now that some companies have decided to put up a paywall to actually apply to their organization because they're getting so many thousands of AI applications because these tools can do that now. I can see a future where companies forbid an AI-enabled application at all and just block them and have tools that block them out and go back to completely human processes for screening because it's gotten so ridiculous. I think some unexpected things will happen that involve rehumanizing business to some extent. It could be 3 to 5 years off, but I think eventually that will happen. I've read other articles that say, what's the future in an abundant society where so many things are automated and robots are widely available? And some people have written that it's like a artisan economy where things that are handmade and more human become much more valuable and important. So I think that remains to be seen. It's out there, but I'm not negative when I look forward like that. I think it's interesting what will come. And people doing the HR element now should be excited about that. This whole debate, this term universal income, if we automate everything and all these people get displaced, we have to do that. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I would say we're going to have to work really hard at maintaining everyone's dignity. And that means giving them something meaningful to do. And HR can play a big role in meaning and purpose. Why are we here? What are we doing? And maybe if we're putting in a bunch of automation somewhere, like in a warehouse or in a factory that's going to displace a lot of people, maybe the HR person's role can change from designing their severance package to envisioning what we might do with all of this human talent that we've got instead of just dumping them and using our creativity to figure that out. What that is, I don't know, but it's a discussion that never happens that I think should. What else could we do instead of that? And that's hard. Nobody wants to deal with it. But I think if the scale of this stuff gets that big, they're going to have to start reconsidering how far they go with putting people on the street. My opinion and my hope.
So you already touched on it a little bit. You had a long career in HR and a career before. What are the most valuable lessons you learned along the way?
The head of HR at Nestle USA, who sent me to Purina, said this to me. Her name was Cam Sterrett. Very wise, smart lady. Marshall Goldsmith wrote this book by the same title, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And I used to give that book to new vice presidents. Everything that made me successful on my way up was not going to be helpful once I got in that chair at the top at Purina. The same goes for really every promotion in your career to some extent. The classic mistake that gets made that everybody talks about is we take the best salesman and make them the head of sales. Then we lost a good salesman and created a problem at the top if they don't know how to lead. And the same thing can happen in every discipline. If you're promoting solely based on technical competence, we try not to do that, but it still does happen. And the lesson is adjust to your new circumstances and surroundings. And if you were a get it done guy or girl that was really good at getting it done, once you get in one of these top jobs and you need to be patient and really start assessing how different personalities and relationships are affecting the company. If you're one of these process oriented people that was always project managing and doing your to-do lists, you're going to find that those tools don't really help you when you're dealing with stubborn and wily and difficult and sometimes dysfunctional executives. Those project skills will go nowhere in that environment. Upon reflection, that is the best advice that I ever got. And the good news is there's a whole book out there written by Marshall Goldsmith people could invest in and spend some time reading if they want to learn more. I think moving around when you're younger if you can, is a good time to do that in your career, because we tend to settle as we get older. I used to tell people, become an expat in the first 10 years of your career. Go spend some time in another country. I did in the military, probably the best thing I ever could have done in hindsight. If you can spend some time in another part of the world, you'll get untold wisdom from it. That would be another good lesson. And try to do as much of that as you can in the first half of your career, because life's going to get complicated and you're going to get a little bit connected to where you're at a certain point. So maybe this Zoom stuff is helping with that in some regard, but there are limits.
You're working on a book. I know it's not ready yet. You're getting close. Tell us what the book is all about.
I never counted, but let's say hundreds, if not maybe 1,000 people came to me looking for career advice over the years, at all levels, from hourlies all the way up to senior executives. I noticed there was a trend, and I narrowed it down to three areas, which were buckets that their issues would always fall into. It was either, obviously, ability to get results if someone was really struggling with expertise and maybe they weren't in the right job or for their skills, whatever. It was results. It was inability to manage relationships effectively, a big part of the job. And we have brilliant people that can't get along with anyone. And that's one of those manifestations. So we had results, relationships, and the third was their reputation. So a lot of times something happened earlier in their career and they became known for it. It was negative. And you were trying to help them climb their way out of that and fix it. It's not impossible. It might be the hardest one to work on. Results, relationships, and reputation. And I wanted to write a book when I retired, and it was really going to end up being a series of rants about stuff I didn't like in corporate America. Not Nestle or Purina. They're wonderful to me, and I wouldn't single them out. But I started talking to a lady named Robin Colucci. I'll give her a plug, who's a book coach, who said, what would you write about if you wanted to change the world? Because she runs this firm called World Changing Books. And I said, I'd have to take all that collective wisdom I had from trying to help people sort their careers out. And I mentioned those three R words, results, relationships, and reputation. She goes, that's the book. You're going to write that. So that's how I got here. And I think we're almost done. I'd say within the month of December, probably, we'll be completely done with some hyper editing that we've been doing. And then we'll pitch it. Hopefully, a publisher will want to do something with it. And in the meantime, some learning for everybody watching. It's not so much about the book anymore. It's about building a platform. I'm doing things I never would have thought I was going to do. And we used to preach in my old gig that you should embrace the uncomfortable as a discipline. And that's part of having a growth mindset. So now I have a YouTube channel and a TikTok channel and an Instagram. And I do a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. And I'm trying to build a platform of subscribers and followers so that when we approach a publisher, things will go well. That's what they want to see. So anyone who's watching this that thinks you might have a book in you, you're going to have to work on that. I think you know that already because you've been through that process. But it was a learning exercise for me, and things are going okay. I'm now used to making little videos. I never thought I would do this. In HR, we're taught to keep our mouths shut. There was a guy named Manny I used to work with, who's a great HR guy. He used to say, the role of an HR knight is to know, to do, and to be silent. There's a lot in there that I agree with. You have to do a lot of stuff that you never talk about in HR. So you stay off the camera and you're not chasing media and that sort of stuff. But now I've learned to do a little bit of that. That's what I'm up to. And thank you for asking.
If people want to follow your growing, emerging social media presence, where should they go?
It's the same on all of them. Real Steve Degnan on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and X. And then on LinkedIn, it's just my name, Steve Degnan. Everybody knows how to do that. And you can take a good look at my propaganda. I try to build in a little humor to most of it just so it's enjoyable.
I really appreciate you sharing your hard-earned insights into the HR function. So thank you very much for that, Steve.
This has been great. I really appreciate the opportunity, Thomas. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time, let's make work matter.